Good morning to everyone. Good to be here. I trust that you are glad to be here today. We do have we are blessed to be able to worship like we can here without fear, without worrying about somebody bursting in through those back doors and calling us on the carpet, as it were, for our faith. Maybe we need more of that to sharpen our faith, sharpen our commitments. I'm not sure. That's not what I planned to talk about this morning, but I was just struck by that thought. I'd like to start this morning. Well, I guess I should greet you all in Jesus' name. I think I forgot to do that, but you've been greeted before, and I trust that we are here in Jesus' name, because it's because of Him that we can come. I'd like to begin this morning by telling you a little story. The story goes back maybe about 30 years ago. At that point in time in my life, I was working for my father. My dad had a warehouse, the warehouse that my brother Paul runs now. And I grew up working in that warehouse, and I knew it very, very well. And by the time I was 13, 14, 15 years old, my father was asking me to, maybe not at 13, but 14 and 15 and 16, was asking me to work the night shift. He would run the warehouse all day and all night. Only it would be shut down from midnight on Sunday morning to midnight, or Saturday morning, or whatever you want to, however the right way is to say it. Midnight to midnight on Sunday, we would not run the machinery. But he asked me to work the night shift, and I did that often. It wasn't my favorite job, but I was asked to do that, and I did it. One particular evening, as I recall, it was about 10 o'clock in the evening, 10:30, something like that. And as most of you are probably aware of, warehouses make a lot of noise. And so you're in there, and the noise is all around you, and you can't hear very well whatever might be going on around you. And I was there running the bagger, bagging the seed. And I was stenciling bags, getting ready to put them on the bagger to continue bagging seed. And I don't remember what I was thinking about. I have no idea. But all of a sudden, I felt something touch the back of my leg. And I literally jumped off the ground and I whirled around and looked down. And there was my stupid little dog. He had followed me down to the warehouse. And he looked up, his tail was wagging, and he had a doggy grin on his face. And I think he thought he had done the best joke that he had ever thought of. Well, it made me jumpy. The rest of the night, I was looking here and looking there. I was nervous. I heard sounds that I'd never heard before. I didn't know what was going on. Did not set the tone for a very good evening, a very good night of work. Also, in that warehouse, 12 o'clock on Saturday night, I had to shut the machinery down, turn all the lights out, and go home. It's very quiet after that machinery has been shut down. And again, you hear all kinds of things. But one thing that I had, one light switch that I needed to turn off, was across the pretty large open space. And I would stand there right by the stairway coming downstairs from upstairs. And I would look out across that space. I'd see that light switch over there. And I knew I had to go over there and turn that thing off. You say, what's such a big deal about turning the light switch off? Well, there were bats flying around all over the place, and I hate bats. And so what did I do? I would steel myself and I'd take off running, convincing myself that running was better than walking. But I would avoid the bats better if I was running, or they would avoid me better if I was running than if I would just walk. And then I always made it, got the light turned off, and after that I couldn't see the bats, and so it was no problem. I just walked back to wherever I needed to go to finish the job. But, you know, the whole thing sounds a little irrational. Sounds a little bit like, well, why were you so able to convince yourself to do something like that? It really made no difference. One time I recall that I did get hit by a bat. But I still ran because I was sure that was the best way to do it. And it is week after week, year after year. Because that light switch always had to be turned off at 12 o'clock on Saturday night. Well, you know what? This morning, I feel a little jumpy. I feel a little nervous. I feel a little bit like maybe I'm trying to avoid the bats. I don't know if that's the right way to say it here, but I'm struggling a little bit with fear. Fear is not a nice thing to think about. And I've had issues, I've had times in my life when fear has been a very, very real thing. I recall the year and a half before we left Poland and all of the problems and things we were involved in there with our house and trying to work through all that. Fear dogged me in such a way that I couldn't seem to get rid of it. And it made me do some very, made me jumpy, made me nervous, made me do some rather irrational things. I look back now and I'm saying, what in the world did you do that for? That made no sense. And this morning, you know, I've struggled with fear in the last few weeks. You know, things, and this is no reflection on you as a group. I love the church here, and I have nobody in mind when I say these things here. But just to give you a bit of things that are going through my mind, thoughts like, what will the people here think of me when I say or do something they don't agree with? And I'm not suggesting you have to agree with everything I say. I have offended people in the past, and I'm sure I'm going to do it again. So I just would rather stay in the background. I don't want to be out in the front. Maybe my vision for church is different than everyone else's vision. Maybe I won't be able to live up to the expectations of people. I don't really want to open myself up and become vulnerable. I'm just going to get hurt, and I'd rather protect myself. People are going to misunderstand me. These are some of the thoughts that have been rolling through my mind. And out of all of that, standing in front of me is this ugly ogre called fear. What do I do with it? The fear of failure, not doing it right. The fear of offending, the fear of misunderstanding, being hurt, of hurting or being hurt. Fear of conflict, fear of the unknown, and other fears have been a real struggle for me recently and in the past. You know, last week I had a devotional about trust. And maybe at this point you're saying, well, you don't really trust us, do you? And I don't want to say that, because I do trust all of you. This is more of my own inner struggle. And I venture to guess that each of you struggle with all of these things that I just mentioned. You struggle with the fear of failure. You struggle with the fear of not doing it right, of offending, of misunderstanding, of hurting or being hurt. You struggle with the fear of conflict. You struggle with the unknown. All of these things are real in your life. They're real for me. They're real for you. But should such fears this morning be a part of your life? Should they be a part of my life? You know what? They are. They are there. They are real. And they will be a part of our lives. We will struggle with fear. But what do we do with it? What do we do with it? The verse I would like to use as a text verse this morning comes from 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. And it goes like this. For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. The title of my sermon this morning is Fear, a Destructive Liability. The verse that I just read you said, God has not given us. Fear doesn't come from God. It's not what He gives us. Instead, He gives us power. He gives us love. He gives us a sound mind. And so when you think of fear, I have already classified it this morning as a liability. Would you classify fear as a liability? Would you classify fear as an asset in your life? Well, I venture to guess that you would immediately say to me if I ask you that question, well, it depends. It just depends. Sometimes it's an asset, sometimes it's a liability. And I guess we can accept that, but I just urge you not to just go there and spit out that answer and then let life go on. But take some time to think about fear as an asset or a liability. Try to understand what it is, where it belongs in your life, how it affects us, and how we should deal with it in our spiritual lives. This morning, I plan to concentrate on the negative side of fear. I recognize the fact that the Bible speaks of fear in a very positive way. Brother Steve read a verse the only verse you read there for devotions. And it talked about the fear of the Lord. And if you go to the book of Deuteronomy, you'll find over and over again, verses like this. Oh, that there were such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it might be well with them and with their children forever. Or in the book of Psalms, but the mercy of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting upon them that fear Him, and His righteousness unto children's children. So yes, there is a positive side to fear. But this morning I don't plan to talk about that. Maybe that's another sermon someday as to where fear should fit in a positive sense in our lives. Because I believe as God's people, we struggle with fear. We allow fear to affect us in an improper way in our spiritual lives many, many, many times. This morning we watched Johnny overcome the fear that so often holds us back in our seats, that fear of having to admit that we made a mistake, having to confess a sin. How many times have you sat in your seat because you're afraid? I have. Is that a positive thing? That is not a positive thing. That is a negative thing. That's why I call it a destructive liability, because it destroys us in ways that we don't know what to do with. We don't know how to deal with it. Fear paralyzes us. As I said, we can't get up. We can't go talk to somebody and apologize because we're afraid of what it will do to our reputation. Dads, when was the last time you apologized to your children? Moms, how about you? We say, I can't do that. I'm, after all, I'm in a position of authority. And if I admit that I made a mistake, that's going to cause a problem. What about the brother sitting beside you or the sister sitting beside you? When was the last time you did what you needed to do? If there was a problem, I don't know if there was. I'm just using that as an illustration. Fear paralyzes us. That's why it is destructive. But please, again, I emphasize, please understand and just let the positive side rest for now. There's a positive side to fear, and the Bible talks about that. But I don't want to think about that this morning. The fear I want to focus on is the fear that separates us from God, rather than causing us to draw near to God. Something that stunts our spiritual growth. Something that takes a form of respect. When uncovered, it is nothing more than fear. And I'll illustrate that a little bit more as we think of our relationships with others. Fear has a lot of effect on our, has many different effects on our spiritual lives, and I've mentioned one already. It paralyzes us. The second one that came to my mind is it stunts our growth. Fear, it stunts our growth. Why? Because fear convinces us that we are happy right where we're at. We fear the results of what a deeper and a deeper commitment, a more sincere searching of God's Word will take us. We don't want to go there. We're afraid of it. And so we don't pursue it. And it stunts our growth. We don't want to be more actively involved in the church. We don't want to participate more. We don't want to attend services more. We don't want to do that because we're afraid of what will happen. We're afraid of what God might call us to do. We're afraid about what the brotherhood might call us to do. It stunts our growth. Fear makes us simply a rider rather than a peddler. I don't know if peddler is a word, but you get the point. We're just somebody who rides along rather than stepping in and pedaling to propel movement forward. Again, I think of the brotherhood, and I have nobody in mind. Please understand me. I've only been here 4 years, and so I don't have time to put you all in the box where you might belong. I don't know where you belong. But church issues, church decisions come up. And we don't participate in them. We don't join in them. We say, oh, if I say something, I'm just going to offend somebody. So I'm just not going to talk. I'm not even going to show up at the meeting because I don't want to participate. Fear makes you just a rider. And shame on you if you're trying to ride into heaven on somebody else's efforts, because it isn't going to get you there. You need to be a peddler. Fear. God becomes a convenient helper rather than a shepherd that we can trust with everything. We look at the future. Nobody knows what the future holds. But you know what? You and I all have ideas about what our future might hold. We have ideas about where we might go. We have ideas about what we might do, what we might be doing, or what we expect to be doing in 6 months or in a year, 3 months, whatever term you want to put on it. God's off here to the side somewhere often, and we don't want to let Him come into that future, because after all, He might say, I want you to do this, I want you to do that. And you say, wait, I can't. I can't do it. I have a business. I have a family. I have somebody I need to take care of. Whatever it is might come up, and we say, we're not going to go there. God, we want you when we need you, but we don't want to give you complete control of our lives to guide us where you want us to go. Because after all, it might be where we don't want to go, and we're afraid of that. That's the kind of spiritual fear that gets us in trouble. This morning, I ask you to think about where you're at in your life. I have no idea. I have no idea what you're dealing with. We heard Scott mention he's dealing with some fear about tomorrow. Not sure how it will go with his wife. We need to be able to take situations like that, and I believe Scott is trying, I really do, but take those situations and trust them to the Lord somehow and believe that He will do what He has said He will do, in that He will take care of us. Fear. Fear becomes a set of earplugs blocking out the voice of God. After all, a situation comes up, we immediately figure it out, and we're done. We have the answer. We have the solution. And we're just done. Somebody tries to talk to us in the church, we're like, oh, we have that. We've already decided where we're at and where we're going. We know what the right answer is. We know what the right approach is. Maybe something from our past comes in and causes us to end up right where we're at. And in essence, we stick earplugs in our ears and refuse to hear. Why? Because we're afraid. You say, oh no, that's not why. Well, I urge you, I challenge you to sit down and think about where you're at in your life right now. And how much fear comes in, how much it plays into your life this morning as it relates to people speaking into it or God speaking into it. And I just urge you to be honest. I know for me it's a big deal. I don't like it. I like to have things figured out. And I don't like things to be spoken to me that don't fit in with the way that I have it figured out. And the most convenient way to approach that problem is to put earplugs in, as it were, and just to ignore. But that's what fear will do, because we feel like earplugs protect. And we have it figured out, and we don't want to consider it anymore. We don't want to hear what God has to say. And we're okay right where we're at. Fear. Fear, another effect it has, it makes us want to fit in and not to be noticed. How many of you like to be noticed when you go to town? How many of you like when people point and you tell, there's a Christian? Our dear sisters deal with that all the time. Or maybe they don't say, there's a Christian. They might say, well, there's an oddball in Poland. It was really weird to see for the people of Poland to see my wife walking down the street, dressed as she was. And they would bring lots of looks. Sisters have no choice, it seems, because that's the way we believe they should appear, and it's good. But how many of us take extra effort to fit in to the world around us so we are not noticed? And why do we do that? Why do you fit in? Why do you hope that nobody notices that you're a Christian? You say, well, that's not really how I feel. Well, is it? Do you welcome the neighbor walking up to you and say, I see you're a believer, you're walking with God, and I'm impressed? We just don't really like to hear that. Well, we like to, but we don't want to look different. We don't want to be odd. We don't want to stand out. We want to fit in. We don't want to be noticed. Why don't you want to be noticed? Because you're afraid of what it will bring to you. You're afraid of what it will call out of you. Maybe you'll get asked a question that you can't answer. Just fit in. Man, we fit in really well. And we like it. At least I do, if I was to be completely honest. But sometimes I feel myself working too hard to fit in so that people don't notice. People don't ask me questions. People don't make assumptions about who I am, because I don't really relish where that's going to take me. It's fear, and it's not a healthy thing because it shuts our mouth and it damages our testimony for God. And we need to be on fire for God. And I'm sure there's other effects of fear in our spiritual lives. These are some that came to my mind, some that I've experienced in my life. And I'm telling you this morning, fear needs to be eradicated. This kind of negative fear, this kind of destructive fear needs to be removed from your life. And instead, you need to take what was spoken of in that verse that I read early on. God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. I'd like to look a little bit at a couple Old Testament stories that illustrate, first of all, the power that is present in the life of a God-fearing person. But also it illustrates how quickly that fear that is also seemingly present in our lives can just pop right out and change the dynamics almost immediately. So if you would like to, please turn in your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 18. This is a familiar story. And I'm not going to read the whole story just because of time and because you all know the story already. So I'll just mention a few things here. Story of Elijah on Mount Carmel. If you look at that story, how many of you young men would like to be like Elijah, where you could stand in the face of 450 false prophets, stand up to the king and the queen of the country, and say, it's going to be this way, it's not going to be that way. I'm going to serve God, and I believe in God, and He'll take care of me, He'll answer my prayer, He'll do all of these things. We all want to be that kind of a person. We'd all love to be like Elijah. He had overwhelming odds. During this whole incident in chapter 18, he watched while these Baal prophets attempted to get their God to respond. He mocked them. Finally, when it was his turn, he even turned up the dial a little bit. And then he built his altar, dumped water on it. I don't know about you, but I never put water on my stove in my house when I want to start a fire. It just doesn't work. I've never been able to do that very well. But Elijah put water on his fire, even more extreme. Here's a picture in this chapter of a man who was not bound by fear, but he said He said, in essence, God didn't give me the spirit of fear, but He gave me the spirit of power. And he lived in that power. He was almost brash in that power. He said, you guys, your God might be sleeping. Why don't you yell a little louder? He believed in it. He knew that power was there. And as we see the end of the story, he was right. That power was there. His prayer was answered. He was a man who believed in the spirit of power that he had received from God. But is that the end of the story? It is not. Go to chapter 19. I don't know how much time is between chapter 18 and chapter 19, but not a lot of time. I'd like to read to you the first four verses. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and withal how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah, saying, so let the gods do to me, and more also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life, came to Beersheba, which belongeth to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree. And he requested for himself that he might die. And he said, it is enough. Now, O God, take away my life, for I am not better than my father's. What happened to the power? Where did it go? Suddenly fear, apparently fear was in his life, in his heart somewhere. I don't know where it came from. But fear came out all of a sudden. He heard that threat from Jezebel and he's like, oh my, I got to get going. And he started running. Where did it come from? What happened to the power he had just the day before, let's say? Maybe it was several days, I don't know. But just a short time before. What happened to it? Where did it go? In its place is fear. And this fear had a profound effect on his life. Let's look at a few effects that it had on him. First of all, this fear gave him a memory loss. You say, a memory loss? Doesn't say that here. Well, apparently he seemed to have forgotten what happened just a few days ago. That God that he served, that power that was supposed to be, that was there just a few days ago, is not there anymore. And he forgot about it. He became very tentative and unsure. Now, how many of you would like to be like this Elijah in chapter 19, where he's running? Nobody wants to be that way. You want to be like the Elijah in chapter 18. You want to be somebody who isn't fearful, somebody who is powerful, who is living in the power of God. This fear affected his ability to think rationally. What does he say in verse 4? He says, "Oh, take my life, just let me die." It's not what he was saying in chapter 18. This fear made him run rather than face his problem. Again, chapter 18, he didn't run. He faced right up to those 450 prophets. Said, "Let's do a contest. My God will, he'll come through. I know he will." Fear distorted the facts. If you read a little further in verse 10, where he has this conversation with God, Elijah says, "I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away." You see, he colored the facts here a little bit. It wasn't the people of Israel that were after him. It was Jezebel. It was that Queen Jezebel who wanted to get him, take his life. But no, his mind had, fear had so affected how he thought, that now it's the whole nation of Israel that wants to get him, that want to kill him. But it wasn't quite that way. He also thought he was the only one left. But if we read a little further, God says, "No, you're not. There's, what was it, 7,000 or something more yet that still are serving me. There's a number that were still serving me." But that's what fear does to you. It gets into your mind and it messes with the way you think. It messes with the way you view life. It messes with the way you look at a situation. You get so worried about it. You get so stressed out by it that you can't even hardly come to the point of saying, "God, I trust you. God, I encourage you to say that with tomorrow, with your wife." I understand if you can't hardly. But don't let fear work you up to the point where you're unable to say, "God, it's in your hands and I believe you will take care of it for the rest of Scott's family as well." Believe. Believe that God has it in His hands. Don't let fear work you up into such a tizzy that you become like this man, where he comes out with things that aren't even the way it really is. Fear destroyed his trust in God. And that's not really said here, but apparently he got to the point where he, as I said earlier, he just wanted to die. He just wanted to end it all. Doesn't sound like too much trust in God to me. And that's really where Satan wants to take us in every situation. He wants to take us to the point where we cannot trust God, whether it's a health issue, whether it's a financial issue, whether it's a church issue, whether it's a family issue. I don't know. I don't care what it is. And there's a lot of impossible situations that we're all facing right now. A lot of difficult things where we worry about it. We fear the result. We fear how it might be. And Satan, as soon as he can get us to ponder that and work that up and twist that around, he has won a major battle because he knows you're not trusting. He knows I'm not trusting when he gets me there. And that's where he wants to go with it in relation to all of this. Somehow we need to trust. Let's look at another story, just briefly, in Numbers 13 and 14. Turn back to Numbers 13 and 14. Okay, I'm not going to read this all either. Maybe just a little bit. Numbers 13 is the story of the 12 spies going into Canaan to spy out the land. And they came back, and as you know the story, there were two opinions among the 12 men that went. One opinion said, "We can take it." This is what Caleb and Joshua were saying. "God will go with us." The other 10 men said, "We can't. It's too difficult. Too many giants. Too many problems." Which one did the people listen to? Well, they listened to that opinion that said we can't take it. And it struck such fear in the hearts of these people that they had some very strange responses. But again, it illustrates to us what fear will do to your ability to think, your ability to trust. It will destroy it. Look at chapter 14. I want to read the first 10 verses there. And all the congregation lifted up their voice. This is after they had heard the two opinions about whether they should go in or not. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us up unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, let us make a captain and let us return into Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel, and Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes, and they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding great land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, the land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. The effects of fear. It created an emotional overload. The first verse says that they cried all night. Fear makes you emotional, and I have nothing against emotions. But you can get yourself worked up into such a fear that your emotions get out of control. And it affects again the way you see things, the way you believe in God, the way you fit God into the picture. It affects all of that when your emotions get so overwrought as these people's emotions were. Again, we see an influence on their ability to think rationally. How many of these people would have said a week earlier, let's say, I want to go back to Egypt. I want to go back there where I was in bondage. Or after all, I wished I would have just died in the wilderness. I would have been better. Anybody, any of these men, any of these people, in their right mind, let's say, would never have said that. They hated Egypt. They didn't want to be there. They were in bondage. They were so happy to get out. Now we see because of fear of the giants and of the unknowns, they said, let's go back. We want to go back. It made no sense. They said, let's kill Moses and Aaron, as it were. Let's make another captain and let's go back. That's not what they really wanted to say. But fear made them say that. Fear overwhelmed their ability to think. And it will do the same to us. To destroy the desire and the ability to hear from God. After hearing the plea from Joshua and Caleb, listen, let's go in. God will take care of us. God has removed the defenses of these people. Let's go in and do it. What was their response? They grabbed stones and said, let's kill these guys. What they're saying doesn't make sense. And I venture to guess that they had nothing. Joshua and Caleb were respected, I would think. The Bible doesn't say, so I'm supposing that a little bit. But I don't think it was in character with the way Joshua and Caleb would have been viewed by the people. But all they could think of was fear. We're afraid. This isn't going to turn out right, potentially. So let's kill these guys who want to take us in there. And let's do what we want to do. Again, I believe these people had memory loss as well, but it doesn't refer to that. But they had forgotten what God had done for them in their journey from Egypt to this point. So, can you relate to any of these points about fear? Have you ever got so stressed out about something, so worked up about something, that you just can't hardly think? You can't hardly trust? You can't hardly bring God into the picture because you don't know how it's going to be? I can relate to it. I can relate to it very well. Fear though we so often try to hide it or give it another name, has a way of revealing itself. The unknowns of the future. None of us know the future. We have no idea what the future holds. None of us know whether God wants us to go on the outreach or not. None of us know whether God wants us to go on the mission field, whether God wants us to be a Sunday school teacher or to be this or to be that. We don't really know what the future holds. We don't know what's going to happen. What do we do with that? It's easy to be fearful. It really is. I remember in Poland, trying to wrestle with that whole question of the future. We had decided to come back. And I cannot describe to you the number of things that had to be dealt with. I don't even remember them all, thank the Lord, what they were. But I do remember trying to deal with the fear of wondering what was going to happen. We were in our house. We were not supposed to be in our house because we hadn't got the final approval yet. People in Poland did that all the time. We were not anything different. But Satan used that fact. You don't have the final approval. And I tried to get the final approval and I had trouble. I had issues. I couldn't get it. Oh, they had to come out and do another inspection. Oh, we had to do another floor plan. Oh, this and oh, that. And I'm telling you, it got to be such an issue in my life. Fear got to be such a big thing for me that I would be sitting in my office, which is on one side of the house, working. And I would hear our dog bark. And immediately, the first thought that came to my mind was, it's a police officer coming in the lane to tell us we've got to get out of here. Now, how rational is that? It never happened in Poland that I know of. And I would run to the living room and look out the window to see what the dog was barking at. That's what fear will do to you. And that's what sometimes when we look at the future, you know, we look at situations, health situations, and we struggle to understand what's going on. We struggle to understand what we should do with it. I think of Matt and Katrina this morning with Zachary. And I know the future with him is perplexing and it's disturbing. Matt told me that. Because they don't know what's wrong with Zachary. At least they didn't know as of yesterday or the day before. I forget the last time I talked to him. But they aren't sure what's causing the problem. They don't know what to do to prevent it from happening again. My encouragement to them and my encouragement to all of you is to somehow put fear down and put trust in its place. God hasn't given you the spirit of fear. He's given you power, and that power enables you to stand up and say, Satan, I'm not going to be overcome by fear. I'm going to choose to trust. I'm going to choose to believe that God will be in charge. Fear. Or it causes us to be unable to commit. We don't want to commit to anything. And I just commented about that the other day. I'm only 45 years old, but it's amazing to me to see how that our society has so switched, has so changed in relation to commitment. Nobody wants to commit. We want to leave all of our options open. That's the way the world tends to view these things. They don't want to commit. And I see that creeping into our churches where there's, oh no, we don't want to commit to this. We don't want to commit to that. We want to leave our options open. Why don't you want to commit? Is it because you're afraid? I don't know. I urge you to think about that. Fear maybe is not where it should be. We can't trust. We don't know the end. We don't know the resolution. And so trust gets put on the back burner. Fear. Spiritual shyness. We call it respect. And I share this next incident with you to my shame. There's nothing I can do about it. But it will live with me till I die. I'll never forget this. This happened about three or four months ago. And I just tell this story to illustrate, and this is not to say that we shouldn't be respectful of others. Of course we need to be respectful of others. And there is a time I'm supposed to be quiet. But you know what? If you want my honest opinion, you and I are too quiet way too much when it comes to our spiritual lives and our spiritual things. We're too ashamed of it. We're too afraid to stand out. We're afraid to be different. We're afraid we might be disrespectful. That's what we say. When in reality, we're just afraid. We're just fearful. And this is what happened to me. We were at a bed and breakfast in Leavenworth, my wife and I. And, of course, bed and breakfast serve you breakfast in the morning. The first morning, it was just her and I for breakfast, so that was no problem. We bowed our heads and gave thanks for the food, and we ate. This bed and breakfast held 12 people. The next morning, there were 12 people there, including us. There were 6 at our table and 6 at another table. The hostess put the food on the table, and I remember getting almost this desperate feeling, what shall I do? What are these people here beside me? There was 2 other couples. What do they think about prayer? Should I pray? Should I not pray? I didn't pray. I said, I'll just pray in my heart. I'm telling you, people, that is so weak. That's fear. That's shame. Now, maybe there is a time. I'm not going to say arbitrarily that there is not a time for something to where we shouldn't talk. But in that situation, I came away from there ashamed of myself because I was afraid. I was afraid to pray. I didn't want them to hear me pray. I was afraid I would offend them. And I walked away from there telling myself I was being respectful. But I wasn't. I was being fearful. The next morning, I can't remember if there was somebody there, if it was just her and I again or not. It seems to me like the next morning I was faced with it again. I can't quite remember. I just remember the second morning very, very vividly. But I think I was faced with it again the next morning. And I didn't pray again. Fear. It will keep us from doing what is right. You say, oh, that's not a very big deal. That's just a little thing. But that little thing creeps into our lives in so many different ways where we're afraid to be a testimony. It makes us spiritually shy. And we walk away from those situations and say, well, wasn't the right time. Well, he would have got angry. Well, I shouldn't have talked to him. Well, they're a Christian already. I don't know what answers we come up with. But we convince ourselves that it's okay. But is it okay? Fear makes us take the gentle approach. Oh my, it's 12 o'clock and my wife's looking at me. We take the gentle approach. By the way, I have a history of going overtime and I was determined not to make that happen. And I know I sound like Leland right now because that's what he said when he started preaching. But anyway, I'll wrap it up here real shortly. We substitute love for truth. Let's just be easy on this person. Let's not be understanding. Let's not be too hard. Let's take time to listen. And all of these things are good and proper in their place. But if it's motivated by a fear of sharing the truth in a situation, then it's a problem. We need to know how to share the truth in love and gently and kindly and all of those things. But don't let fear drive us away from sharing the truth. So what do we do with all of this? We have this, I'm going to say that I suspect that within all of us here, there's fear. There's fear maybe it's buried in under the surface quite a ways. Maybe it hasn't shown itself for a while. But you look at a man like Elijah who was as bold could be, and he wasn't afraid of anything, it didn't seem like. And all of a sudden that thing popped up and he was afraid of a woman who could take his life. She had the authority to do it. And he was running from that situation. So if it can happen to him, I suppose it can happen to us. What do we do with this? What do we do with this fear? Let me read to you a few more of those verses. One verse from Numbers 14. I read it already. This was Joshua and Caleb speaking to the people. And they said, chapter 14, verse 9, only rebel not against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. You know, they said in that, these men said to the people, don't rebel. Don't rebel against the Lord. And we shouldn't rebel either. We need to listen. We need to be obedient. We need to hear. We need to be have a soft heart. We need to be attentive so that when we are spoken to by God or by God's people, we can hear. And we can understand and we can move forward and not be held back because we're fearful. When we are living in rebellion, this breeds fear in our lives because we're afraid of being caught. We're afraid of being found out. Don't live in rebellion. Also in this verse, these men said, God is with you. His presence is always there. You don't have to be afraid. You don't have to fear because God is with you. Remember that. Let's go into the land. They wouldn't listen. In Deuteronomy 36, verses 6 and 8, I won't read them, but it speaks there that God will never fail you. It's again, the children of Israel being spoken to, and they are told, God will never fail you. He will never forsake you. He will always be there. You don't need to fear. You and I don't need to fear either. Because all of these things that were spoken to the children of Israel are spoken to you and me. And we don't need to let fear come in and overpower us. For God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. So you have fear here, you have power, love, and sound mind over here. And I didn't have time to talk about those three. You can study them yourself. It's very interesting if you look in the Old Testament, again, at different stories of men who claimed that power and they cast aside that fear and they did wonderful things. David and Goliath. David wasn't fearful. He claimed the power of God and he killed that Goliath. Esther, when she went before the king, she wasn't fearful. She claimed the power of God and she saved her people. And the list could go on. There's a number of stories. The three Hebrew children. They said, you know, king, it doesn't matter what you do to us. We serve a God who will save us. If you throw us in the fire, it doesn't matter. They had fear down and out. They had the power of God in front of them. I encourage you to claim that promise in your life as well. Deuteronomy 31, 6 to 8 says, be strong and of a good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord thy God, He it is that doth go with you. He will not fail you nor forsake you. And Moses called unto Joshua and said unto him, in the sight of all the people, be strong and of good courage, for thou must go with this people unto the land which the Lord hath sworn unto their fathers to give them, and thou shalt cause them to inherit it. And the Lord, He it is that doth go before thee. He will be with thee. He will not fail thee, neither forsake thee. Fear not, neither be dismayed. I urge you this morning, accept this. Accept the truths that are in that those verses. Believe it. Remember it. Because within that framework, upon that foundation, you can commit your way unto the Lord. You can trust in Him. And He will bring it to pass, the Bible tells us. Get rid of fear. And may God help you to believe. May God help you to trust and live in the power that comes with that. Thank you. Let's have a song.